first day of argument in April, and I want to welcome you all to the courtroom, but a special welcome to Deerfield High School students. Would the students please stand so we can see them? Thank you very much for coming. You may be seated. And we also have Ripon College Pre-Law Society, students from Ripon College. Would they stand? Thank you for coming. You may be seated. Ripon College often sends their pre-law students, the society students, and we welcome you as we have welcomed others over the years. Students are here with a program cleverly entitled Court with Class. The students across the state are invited to come and listen to oral argument. If the invitation is accepted, the students are set materials about the case. They may engage in some activities relating to the case. They come and listen to an oral argument. And at the end of the second oral argument today, the students will meet with a justice who has been assigned for the day to discuss the procedures of taking a case and deciding a case. The discussion is not about the substantive issues in the case. And everyone in the courtroom, including counsel, are invited to come and join in that discussion. Let me introduce, first I'll ask if anyone would like a summary of the case we're about to hear. The marshal will be happy to distribute a summary to you. Would you raise your hand if you want a summary? It's easier to understand and listen to oral argument if you know the facts and the legal issues involved. Let me introduce the court to you now that we've met you. I'm Shirley Abrahamson. I'm the Chief Justice. And to my right is Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. She's the justice with whom the students will meet today. Seated to her right is Justice David Prosser. And seated to Justice David Prosser's right is Justice Ziegler. To my immediate left is Justice Crooks.
There you go. Good job, Chief.
Good job. Five out of seven isn't too bad.
Oh, you're doing right. Well.
Justice Patience Rogensack and Justice, on the far left, Justice Michael Gableman. With those introductions made, I will now call our first case today, 11 AP 1112, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel versus the City of Milwaukee. I'm going to read the lineup so we all are in agreement. Mr. Dreps, Attorney Dreps, representing the Journal Sentinel, has 18 minutes. Ms. Benedin, Assistant Attorney General Benedin, representing the City of Milwaukee, has 7 minutes. Not right?
I actually
heard the amicus. Your amicus for whom? Okay. I have to tell you, I often read this. There's very infrequently a mistake. So I often wonder, should I do this? Now I know I should. So that's very helpful. Thank you. 30 minutes for Melanie Swank, representing the City of Milwaukee. That's right. We don't want you on both sides, right? And 5 minutes for Attorney Dreps in rebuttal. All right? Got it? Okay. Ready to go, Mr. Dreps.
Good morning. May it please the court. I am Robert Dreps with Godfrey & Kahn Law Firm here in Madison. With me at council table is Jennifer Peterson. She is the media counsel and deputy general counsel for Journal Communications. We represent Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and two of its reporters, Ben Poston and Gina Barton. We're here this morning on a question of statutory interpretation under the open records law. It concerns the costs a record custodian can charge to a requester. The specific issue is whether the state allows, whether state law allows the city of Milwaukee to charge the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel the cost of staff time spent to review and redact confidential information from police records before disclosure. The newspaper contends that the plain language of Section 19.35 sub 3 of the statutes controls the outcome of this case. The legislature specifically listed in Section 19.35 sub 3 the four tasks custodians are authorized to charge requesters for performing. Under subsection A, they can charge the actual necessary and direct cost of reproducing public records. Under sub B, they can charge to photograph and for photographic processing of pictures of records that can't be copied. Under sub C, they can charge for the cost of locating a record, but only if that cost exceeds $50. And under sub D, they can charge the actual necessary and direct cost of mailing or shipping a record to a requester if they mail or ship the record. That's all the statute specifies for fees. It does not authorize any charge for reviewing and redacting confidential information from public records, which is a task the legislature expressly imposed on custodians in Section 19.36 sub 6. Without statutory authorization, no fee may be charged, as the Attorney General concluded in a formal opinion issued only 8 months after the open records law became effective on January 1, 1983.
The Attorney General has said several things on different occasions, though, hasn't he?
Well, that's right. The Attorney General has had to contend with nuance introduced in a pair of this court's opinions in 2002 and 2008. Some custodians, including the city of Milwaukee, have taken the position that the court's language in those two cases, the Osborne decision in 2002 and the Wire Data decision in 2008, literally changed the standard for charging fees, substituting for the four specific provisions in 19.35 sub 3 a broad and general fee standard that authorizes record custodians to charge all costs of complying with a request, except that they can't make a profit. So quite literally, the city of Milwaukee contends that this court rewrote the statute in Osborne and in Wire Data.
Do you think that the court did that?
I do not think the court did that. I think its actual statements in both cases are perfectly consistent with the statutes and, in fact, express deference to the statutes. In Osborne, the court said, under Section 19.35 sub 3, the university may impose a fee on Osborne for the location, reproduction, or photographic processing of the requested records, but the fee may not exceed the actual necessary direct cost of complying with the open records request. This statement precisely mirrors Section 19.35 sub 3, and subsection A, B, and C.
Counsel, aren't we struggling with what these words mean? Actual, necessary, and direct? I mean, if they were all so clear and so plain, we wouldn't really be in here arguing with one another about this. We'd be able to easily sort it out. And we have conflicting policies. I mean, it's clear that the open records is an extremely important statute, and the records of governmental organizations or agencies in Wisconsin must absolutely remain open. The other is basically a requester like the Journal Sentinel who is asked for a very significant amount of information that everybody agrees can't just be photocopied and provided because there's confidential information in there, is really asking the court to put an unfunded mandate on whatever agency you're asking for governmental records from, because it's a lot of money they're going to have to cover somehow to provide these records. So, you know, the words, I struggle with them. I mean, I understand the examples that are given, but, you know, actual, necessary, and direct cost of reproduction, when you can't just give someone the record that you have, why isn't redaction
part of that? Why isn't it part of reproduction?
Your Honor, I think there is not ambiguity in actual, necessary, and direct.
Why
I think
not?
That simply states that a custodian or the government authority the custodian works for may not profit from a public records request. They can't inflate the cost of copies in order to pad their budget. They have to make a reasonable estimate of the actual costs, and they can charge no more than that. The tasks that are specified each carry that designation, actual, necessary, and direct. And I think it's the task that needs to be the focus of this court. Reproduction means photocopying generally. And that's been the understanding of custodians for 30 years.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Under DWD 149008, which is not a statute, they are required to provide records of unemployment insurance. And under subsection C, they are also allowed to charge a fee for the actual, necessary, and direct costs. And those fees include photocopy, postage, computer programming, and labor costs. So the DWD reg was written in 2008, so it's, you know, our open records statute is old. And in fact, all the legislative history said that they thought that the requests under this proposal will be minimal. So, you know, we've gone a long way from when the statute was enacted. Now we've got DWD who has to provide records. They go well beyond, and they say it specifically in their regs. I know the statute says as otherwise provided by law, but if I look at DWD and someone doesn't want to pay that, well, then can the city of Milwaukee just be otherwise provided by law and pass a statute or an ordinance and say, this is what we charge?
To the extent the DWD regulation exceeds what the statute authorizes, that regulation is invalid. But I don't think it does exceed.
Well, the statute says it's otherwise provided by law. All the ones you've referenced, they say as this is what you charge, except as otherwise provided by law. Now, a reg, you can argue, isn't a law, but you could also argue that it is a law. I mean, we don't have that question before us. I looked at it because our statute is so old, okay? And you're asking us to interpret an old statute in light of what's going on today in a way the legislature clearly didn't intend that it would probably be used. Now, whether that's helpful or not helpful, I think what it does for me is it says to me, actual, necessary, and direct may not be quite so plain. And I guess that's getting back to my argument with your argument, is that is it really all that clear?
Well, I think it is. I think the regulation you quoted is actually consistent with the longstanding interpretation of reproduction. The Attorney General has advised custodians in the Attorney General's role of giving guidance on the open records law that the actual, necessary, and direct cost of reproduction can include as a component the time a staff person spends running a copy machine. That's why a copy costs more when you get it from the government than when you get it from perhaps a copy service.
Well, computer programming is also allowed in there, and I would put that a little bit in a different framework.
Let me take another approach here.
Okay.
A 30-year-old statute may well need refreshment, and certainly government record-keeping processes have changed dramatically over those 30
right,
years.
I agree.
However, it is not this court's role to fix the statute. The court's role certainly is to point out ambiguities or problems with the statute, if there are any. I don't think that the fact that it costs the government money to comply with the open records law is a problem that the legislature didn't contemplate. They perfectly well understood that when they passed the law. But if the statute needs refreshment, this court's role is to advise the legislature that it should take another look at it. The court has said on many occasions that it does not rewrite statutes simply because the legislature may not have contemplated an issue that has come before the court.
I'm not bothered by the words actual, necessary, and direct, which are repeated in various subsections. I think the question is the costs of what? So under 3A, it's reproduction and transcription, right?
Right.
So my question to you, and it'll be a series of questions, does redaction come within the terms reproduction and transcription? The next one under B is the cost of photographing and photographic processing. So does redaction, I assume that's the issue in the case, right?
Redaction. Yes, redaction is the issue.
Cost of redaction, does that come under photographing and photographic? These are words that are defined in the dictionary, right?
That's true.
That's the court's usual process. I don't think you're going to find that redaction is covered under reproduction and transcription in a dictionary definition, or photographic processing. Then, locating a record.
Right.
That's also a very common word. And then the next one, again, always using actual, necessary, and direct cost, which goes to G, which deals what happens when you got when you hire somebody, right?
Right.
So D is mailing or shipping. So mailing or shipping, does that include redaction? We don't have a waiver issue here. And we do have a subsection, which I've now lost in my file, that says that the government has to redact.
That's right. It's
and it doesn't say the costs of redaction go to the are imposed on the requester.
That's right? Exactly right. That was the basis for the Attorney General's opinion in
1983. Now, if you're going to look at the plain language of the statute, and I think the first thing you look at is what exactly does the statute say? So the statute says, thou shalt redact, right?
Right.
And then the statute says nothing about the cost of redacting, right?
Right.
So when this statute was adopted, everybody knew there'd be redaction, and yet nothing is said about the costs, right?
That's right.
Now, if you're an original intention person in interpreting a statute, then you look at it and say, hey, on the face of this, it doesn't cover. But one of my favorite original intentionalists said in Madison, you look at the trajectory of the statute in interpreting it, which raises some questions about original intent or plain text, but we can set that aside, and said, what's the trajectory here? Well, I don't know that you have to do that in light of the statute redaction. So what other issues are there? Now that I've resolved that question, or the in terms of interpretation, and you followed the interpretation in Schill, which goes to legislative history.
That's right. We listed all of the factors the court considered in Schill in our initial brief and showed how the steps in the process of statutory interpretation all favor the newspaper's position in this case, from plain language to legislative history to even the treatment in other states.
But who's mandating costs on a redaction? Just as Rogensack said, this court shouldn't have an unfunded mandate. Is it this court that has an unfunded mandate?
No, Your Honor, it's not this court's mandate. It was the legislature's mandate. In 19.36 sub 6, the legislature specifically required custodians to separate information that needs to be confidential before disclosure. They didn't use the word redact, but that's the common word used by custodians and requesters. And the Attorney General's analysis was precisely as yours was, Chief Justice, in 1983. The statute imposes the duty. The statute does not authorize a charge. Therefore, no charge can be made. Counsel. And that was the common understanding until the court's decision
Justice
in 2002.
Ziegler.
Thank you, Chief.
Yes.
Assuming you win, Schill also talks about the fact that there should not be an unreasonable burden on the custodian in producing the records. At what point does a request become an unreasonable burden such that, be careful what you ask for, it may be denied, right? If you ask for too much and they have to pull people off of other jobs and they can't charge you for their time and they're not going to be able to get to this work, either A, it could affect the timing, or B, it could just be deemed unreasonable. Yes? No?
Yes, that's right.
And that's the answer?
Well, there is not a bright line. The statute does not authorize just a broad general fishing expedition. 19.35 sub 1H requires that every request be specific as to time and subject matter, and it does allow denying a request that doesn't have that kind of specificity, and the courts have approved denials on requests that were deemed overbroad. The city has taken the position in this case that it might have denied these requests under that statute, but chose instead, in good faith, to honor the requests but attempt to charge for it.
So should maybe that be the answer? If you get something that just is going to take so much time or pull too many people off or take too long to respond to and is just so voluminous that you respond, the request is unreasonable, should they put a caveat in there? But if you're willing to pay for an employee's time, we will devote an employee's time to this project?
I don't think the law would forbid an agreement like that between a requester and a custodian, but if the requester says no and the custodian denies because it's overbroad, they might challenge that denial in court and say it literally does not meet that overbroad standard in sub 1H. So it's an avenue that's already available to record authorities and custodians, but one that they appropriately use with caution because of the general presumption that everybody is entitled to the greatest possible information about the affairs of government. In an appropriate case, it should be applied and has been. And in this case, I don't think it is an appropriate ruling. If the city had denied this as overbroad, I think the newspaper would have properly challenged that because the requests were very precise as to subject matter and length of time. Granted, they were large requests and imposed a large burden, but the city of Milwaukee is a large entity, and the reason it has a lot of records in a two-week period that one of the requests sought is because there is a lot of crime in the city of Milwaukee.
It's just a reasonableness issue. You know, is it reasonable then it'll take them a lot longer to get the request done? They're not denying it. It just may take a really long time. Is that reasonable then?
That is perfectly reasonable, and that's what the law tries to accommodate. It's a case-by-case evaluation of whether the time or the expense is appropriate. But as to specific tasks, the law is very specific on what can be charged.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel. Attorney Benedin, now that we've decided who you represent, you may proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Carrie Benedon, and I appear on behalf of Amicus Wisconsin Department of Justice. As the court knows, the Wisconsin Department of Justice has taken the position that Wisconsin's public records law does not authorize charging a requester for redaction costs. I'm not here today to repeat the arguments that have been capably presented by Attorney Drepps. Rather, I requested to participate in today's argument to make one primary point, and of course to answer questions that the court may have as to the Attorney General's position on this issue. Wisconsin's public records law, as has already been recognized, requires that a response to a request be made as soon as practicable and without delay. And in this court's decision in the Wire Data case, the court acknowledged that the law affords authorities reasonable latitude in the time frame for their responses. It is the Attorney General's position that the duty of responding to a public records request is a mandatory duty imposed on authorities. It is no less important than the other duties or obligations that must be performed by government entities. In response to the concern that responding to a public records request, and specifically redactions, is an unfunded mandate, I submit to the court that it is not an unfunded mandate. Every agency, every authority has a budget, and responding to public records requests and performing redactions is part of that agency or office's obligations. Therefore, the funding comes from the budget that is allocated to that office. At the same time, though, it is also the Attorney General's position that responding to public records requests does not necessarily take precedence over all of the other necessary duties and obligations of an agency or office. So a balance must be struck between requiring an authority to immediately devote 100% of its resources to immediately undertaking the task of redaction, which could be very large in some types of cases, while at the same time providing an appropriate response in a reasonable time frame.
Counselor, are you telling us that every authority in the state of Wisconsin has personnel that are just designated to answering open records requests?
Absolutely not. There certainly are.
But they're just as subject to our decision as is one that is, correct?
They are. They are subject to that obligation, but presumably they may not have specific personnel devoted to that task. In fact, even large agencies or large villages, for example, may not have a specific person devoted to that task, but it is no less a requirement and part of their regular duties as anything else, answering the phones or anything else that they may do. The Department of Justice requests that this court, in its decision in this case, specifically acknowledge that when the task of redaction is large, that the time frame for responding will be impacted by that task. That's particularly true when dealing with a records request such as that in this case, which was for police records. The public records law requires certain redactions, and police records in particular may be prone to many of those required redactions. For example, redacting information on confidential informants or crime victim information. And so by this court specifically acknowledging that the task of redaction may appropriately impact the time frame for responding, that will provide some level of security to authorities who are concerned that if they don't immediately devote all of their resources to responding to a public records request, they open themselves up to lawsuit.
What do you think of the idea of saying it will take us an extraordinary amount of time, whatever it is, to respond to this? If you would like that process expedited, we can do that, but there will be a cost. You know, it'll be the cost of the employee who had to be devoted to that task, or whatever, the redaction cost.
The law does not authorize requiring somebody to pay for redaction.
That's not a requirement. That's if you want it expedited. It's sort of like a court reporter. You order a transcript, you get it within X amount of time. But if you want it before that, you pay a different fee because it's expedited. Does that make it unreasonable to take longer? I mean, I'm hearing you say if it's a big request and it requires redaction, you get more time, right? So what's that? What's that really mean?
In response to your question, I would submit that it may not necessarily violate the law to do as you propose, to say we will make reasonable efforts and reasonable headway to redact. For example, perhaps we will allocate one person to do this task of redaction, and it might take that person so many weeks or even months, depending on the volume of the request. If you want it faster, then perhaps we would charge. Is that what you're asking?
And I don't know if most offices could devote an entire person to doing that job.
Perhaps not, and that comes under reasonableness, and depends on the size of the agency and the resources available. So some offices might have a person whose job it is to respond to public records requests. Other offices might have to say, we will devote one person 1 hour a day to do redactions, and however long it takes, that's how long it takes.
Counsel, I'm sorry, please finish.
Oh, I was simply going to finish that this court should then recognize that might be reasonable under the circumstances for that office in responding to that request.
How does your argument play out, not with regard to the city of Milwaukee or agencies or offices? I live in the town of Maine, outside of Wausau, so in the country, in the town of Maine. We have a town clerk that works two afternoons, maybe three afternoons a week, at least in the past. How does your argument affect those kind of public authorities, and isn't it an unreasonable task upon them?
The public records law does not authorize in response to a point that was addressed earlier, the public records law does not authorize an authority to say, I can't respond to that request because the task of redaction is too burdensome. That point was addressed by this court in the Osborne case, where this court specifically foreclosed one party's attempt to rely on the Court of Appeals decision in Shopper that said that if a request is too broad or unduly burdensome, then the request can be denied. This court said in Osborne that if the request is legally appropriate, then the burdensomeness of redaction cannot be used to deny the request altogether. The task of redaction is mandatory. So in response to that scenario where it's a small authority, and I see my time is up. May I finish?
You may finish.
If the scope of the request is appropriate under the law, then the request must be responded to. And the redaction might take weeks or even longer, depending on the availability of resources. But if the request is appropriate, then the redactions must be performed. Thank you.
Counsel, your brief relies on plain meaning. The language of Wisconsin's public records law does not authorize charging a requester for redaction, and it's not this court's role to change that law. Is that the position of the Attorney General?
It is, Your Honor.
And on page 7 of your brief, you cite 1935 1H and the Gale case for the position that you can deny requests. Where in the open records law is the provision about reasonable time or reasonableness in answering this matter?
19.35 sub 4 is the section that provides that a response must be made as soon as practicable and without delay.
So you already have a reasonableness that the legislature put in.
That's correct. And I am simply asking that this court explicitly recognize that the task of redaction should factor into the reasonableness. This court has already recognized that the size of the request and other components of the request impact reasonableness, and the Attorney General requests that this court recognize that redaction also impacts reasonableness.
Under the statute, you're not adding to that. You're
correct.
Interpreting what reasonableness means.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Any further questions? All right. We'll now hear from Assistant City Attorney Melanie Swank, representing the City of Milwaukee. Ms. Swank,
thank you.
You have 30 minutes.
Good morning. May it please the Court. I am Melanie Swank. With me today is Deputy City Attorney Linda Burke. We're here asking you to interpret the public records law, specifically the fee provision of the law. We're not asking you to rewrite the statute or to create policy. We understand that that's not the court's role. It is our position that everything you need to interpret the law to allow for charging these costs in this case is already there. We know that statutory interpretation says that you should look at the statute as a whole in the context that it's written, not each individual subsection in isolation. The Attorney General interpreted the public records law in 1983 to conclude that you can charge the cost of a computer run as a copying cost, citing section 19.35 parens 1 parens E, which mandates that if a record is not in readily comprehensible form, a requester has a right to a copy of the information in the record assembled and reproduced in writing. They took that section of the statute and determined that an authority can charge its cost for a computer run as a copying cost, stating that reproduction fees includes the cost to assemble the record to produce it in a disclosable format. Here, we have hundreds of records that are responsive to this request. They include very confidential, very sensitive information, but that by law, under 19.36 parens 6, we have a mandatory duty to redact prior to disclosure. If you look at the text of the statute, the intent of the statute is for access, transparency, and government. There's nothing in the statute that contemplates passing the costs of complying with requests to the authority. The statute contemplates the requester to pay those costs. And the way the statute is written, it's a reasonable interpretation to pass on the redaction costs to the requester. The redactions are mandatory. The only way the records can be produced in this case is to assemble the public record portions of these documents and reproduce them in a format that is publicly disclosable.
So what language are you interpreting to cover a redaction?
As the court said in Osborne, the cost to locate, reproduce, and photographic processing to produce the records.
So which are the words? Locate?
And reproduce.
And reproduce. So what was the cost here in locating these records?
In our case or in Osborne?
In your case.
In our case, we have a request for every sex assault, attempt rape throughout the entire city for 2009. Mm-hmm. The request was for the call data relating to these complaints, and it was for investigative summaries. Mm-hmm. Because we have massive electronic storage of records, the police department can do a computer run to pull together documents that may be responsive. But once these investigative summaries were pulled together, the work wasn't completed.
Okay. So for the word locate, you could do a computer run, right? So how much was the cost of the computer run?
I think they charged $100 for the computer run.
All right.
But the job wasn't finished at that
point. No, I understand that. So then, but I'm trying to get this within the statutory language, right? Because you're interpreting a statute. So I want to know what words you're interpreting and how much it costs within that interpretation. So the locate, this computer run was $100. That's really quite reasonable. I congratulate the police department for having such a good computer system. Go ahead.
So once they have the investigative summaries, sex assault, that's just the initial few pages of the report. Those reports don't necessarily indicate whether an arrest had been made in the case. So they have to look at the entire investigative report to see if an arrest had been made, determine if there's an ongoing investigation, to determine if there had been a public trial, which impacts how much of the information within the records.
So now you're looking at these records to determine whether there has to be any redaction, whether it's still in the investigative stage. That would be one response to a request, right? Whether there's been a trial puts it in another category.
Yes.
And even within those, you might have to redact, right?
Yes.
Okay, so we've located them for $100. Now we are looking to determine what to redact. Is that right?
A portion of those records are actually public records.
Okay. Where in what language of the statute are you relying on for that?
I'm looking at the interpretation of the Attorney General when they had a request for a record not in readily comprehensible form. By analogy, we have a record, but it's not in readily disclosable form by law. So they must locate the disclosable or public record portions of those documents, then assemble those disclosable portions, and then reproduce the disclosable portions in order to respond to these requests.
Now, reproduce is quite clear in the statute. I mean, that word is there. So you don't have problems necessarily about reproduce. It's this middle step of what language to redact. And you're saying not comprehensible form is equivalent to not disclosable form.
Yes.
That's what I hear you saying.
I think you could interpret that way. The court the circuit court in this case chose not to strictly construe the fee provisions of the public records law, and we're urging this court not to strictly construe, especially when it is in conflict with the intent of the legislation as a whole.
Here we have one of those statutes that tells what this intent is, what this regimen's supposed to accomplish, and that's in 19.31, Declaration of Policy. How does your argument about the intent
of the statute as a whole fits specifically with the words of 19.31, which is the expressed legislative intent of the purpose and policy.
The legislative intent is one of openness and transparency in the functions of the government, how it does its business. But as we know from our court decisions, that right is not absolute. And also from the text of the statute, you know that the right to access is not without cost. It's not without cost both to the requester and to the authority. It's a shared cost, as the newspaper points out. And as the Department of Justice pointed out in their brief, and as we noted, the police department could have denied this request outright as being with an insufficient subject matter and time, and to such an extent required so much work that it created a burden far beyond what's required by the public records law, that it interferes with its normal everyday functioning. They could have argued that. They could have responded that way, but that's much more of an impediment to openness than is what the police department decided to do, which is a conservative estimate of its actual, necessary, and direct costs of complying with these requests and charging those to the requester.
Does the police department have a standard policy for anybody who makes a request in regard to what they charge for? I understand this was a very big one, so it ended up before us. But just say I wanted two records, just two, and they were there, but they also had confidential information, so they had to be redacted. Would the police department, do they have a policy that says they would charge for the redaction of two records, or is this a charge that came about because so many were asked for?
The police department has informed me that 99% of their requests, or a large percentage, are for one or two reports, just as you've pointed out. Some require minor redaction. The statute also says that if it's in the public interest, an authority can waive fees in the appropriate circumstances. And in that type of circumstance, it's probably appropriate to waive because it costs more administratively to process the check for $5 than it would to charge the fee. But when it's massive requests, when we're talking about hours of staff time, then we think it's appropriate to charge those costs to the requester. I think that's fair to the requester, it's fair to the authority and to the public who ultimately would pay these costs. In Schill, the court pointed out that you can interpret the public records law and apply it to factual situations not explicitly encompassed in the statute and not contemplated when the statute was drafted. When the statute was drafted, we didn't have massive electronic storage of records. We didn't have the ability to gather these types of records. In 1981, the police department might have said, these records are kept in all sorts of locations. We would have to go from file cabinet to file cabinet, which would mean we have to create a record to respond, which the law doesn't require. Today, the police department is able to do that, but this also incurs significant expenses along with the onset of advanced technology.
Could I ask a question about the implications of this? One of the reporters, I think, asked for two weeks of reports.
Correct.
In March 2010.
Yes.
And that was a fairly extensive request.
Yes.
Suppose everyone here in the audience asked for a different two-week period.
I think that's a point that the League brought up in their amicus brief, that, you know, an authority has no control over who's going to be making broad requests such as the ones at issue here. And the city does see a lot of these types of requests. This is one of the broadest we've ever had. But we do see very significant time-consuming public records requests. And it's difficult, quite frankly, to comply with all of these. But as soon as practicable and without undue delay, the city responds to these requests. Does that answer your question? We also agree with the League brief.
Council, if I may, is it also your position that with regard to redaction, that if the cost is more than $50, that's the rule that we should be implementing, then the fee can be assessed? You were earlier discussing about if it's two pieces of paper or two reports in response to Justice Rogensack's question. So I want to focus again on cost. Is it your position that if the cost of redaction is more than $50, it can be charged?
We've not designated a specific dollar amount. It's pretty much a common sense application. If redacting takes 10 minutes or a half an hour, it's going to take longer to write a letter, send a letter, charging for the cost than it is to just waive the cost as allowed under Section 3E.
How does that fit? Because everyone is saying, oh, we don't want you to write anything into the statutes, you know, and you started your argument with that. If you're focusing on the location as redaction being part of location, that's set forth in sub C of 19.35.3. And that has expressly that $50 limit, so that's why I'm following up on that, or threshold, may I say.
We believe the statute is written so that the requester bears the cost of complying, and it limits those costs to the actual necessary and direct costs, and the authority is not burdened with the financial cost of complying with request except for the first $50 in location costs. We're looking for a kind of a hybrid, interpret the statute as a whole, the time to locate the public records within these documents, to assemble the disclosable portions, and to reproduce. So it's a combination of A and C, really, that allows the authority to pass these redaction costs on to an authority. And to answer a previous question, if the department receives requests of this magnitude frequently at some point, they must start to deny requests as being overly burdensome because it interferes with the other essential functions of the police department. And the police department in Milwaukee and any other city in the state has significant other essential functions that it must balance with its duties under the public records law. We agree with the point brought by the League in their amicus brief that the legislature has provided the authority a right to charge for location fees. In both the police department's initial response, or maybe it was its second letter, to Poston and Barton in these requests, they stated that they were going to pass the cost to locate the disclosable portions of these records to the requester at the rate of $40.12 per hour for the individual who could do the review and the redaction of the records. We're required by law to redact. There's no option there. We note that the Department of Justice notes in their brief that this is simple pen and paper redaction. There's nothing fancy or complicated about this. Some of these redactions are fairly simple. It's fairly quick to find Social Security numbers listed in these records, and Social Security numbers are in these records. You can cross those out with a pen fairly quickly. But as I stated previously, there's also other steps that the police department is obligated under the law to do before they release these records. We believe that these costs should be passed to the requester and not to the city and not to the taxpayer. I'd also like to note in the court.
Ms. Frank, before you go further, in wire data near the end of the opinion, we indicated that we as a court were not changing the statute in regard to fees that could be charged. And as I sit and listen to all of this today, I wonder why you are not looking to the legislature to give you relief rather than to this court.
Well, let me just respond to that by saying in wire data, as the court noted, the issue of fees was not left before the Supreme Court. After you sorted out all of the other issues, you found that they did not charge the fee to what was actually the responsive record. But the court did note, agreeing with the Department of Justice, that a requester can charge its cost for computer programming expenses, other related expenses, and an authority can recoup all of its actual costs. I think it's significant that after wire data and after the language in Osborne, which strongly implies, though doesn't say, that an authority can charge its costs for redaction fees, that's all that was at issue in Osborne, were the redaction costs. After the wire data and Osborne decisions, the legislature did not respond to the court's language in those decisions. It did respond by amending subsection 3 by adding G, which addresses records that are kept by an independent contractor as a result of a contract. They did not address the court's language in either Osborne or wire data that stated, in Osborne, you must redact confidential information. You're not required to bear these costs alone. You can charge for the location, reproduction, photographic processing of the records in Osborne. The costs in Osborne were redaction costs. And in Osborne, or excuse me, in wire data, you can recoup, the authority can recoup computer programming expenses. That's not explicitly in the statute. And you can recoup all of your actual costs. I don't know that it's necessary to go to the legislature at this point, because the legislature is obviously aware of the court's language in wire data and chose not to respond. So the court can therefore assume that the legislature acquiesced to the court's language in Osborne and wire data.
Well, quite obviously, the interpretation that you're giving to that language is not the interpretation given by the Milwaukee Journal in this case. So if you think the language is clear, it fascinates me that you would think that it's clear when we said at the end of wire data, we're not changing the law. We're not modifying the law in regard to what can be charged. I'm having trouble understanding why you think you can pick and choose out of context language in those two cases, despite what's said at the end of wire data.
I think that the answer is that the court is free to interpret the statute, the entire statute, not A, B, C, and D in isolation, but the entire statute, which contemplates passing the costs of complying with the public records request to the requester.
Within the statute.
Within the statute. The Attorney General interpreted that to mean the cost to locate, assemble, and reproduce a responsive record. Those costs can be passed on as reproduction costs. In wire data, the court seemed to affirm the Attorney General opinion. You can pass the cost of computer programming, which is not explicitly in the statute, as a reproduction cost, and included with that location costs. And that's interpreting the statute, not a strict construction, but an interpretation of the statute as a whole. The legislature did not amend or change the law to address that language, so I believe you could interpret that to mean that the legislature has acquiesced to that language. I think that's a common sense application of the law. The law does not contemplate the authority bearing the cost of complying with public records requests. If that's not what the court meant to say, then perhaps this is a case of first impression, and you can look at other states and how they have interpreted their public records law, as you did in Schill.
Can I interrupt you at this point? What costs that the municipality incurs to respond to an open record request? What costs cannot Milwaukee pass on to the requester? I mean, I hear you say any costs they have, as long as they are actual, and it's okay, the three words, direct, actual, et cetera. What costs cannot be passed on?
What we are asking is for the actual necessary and direct cost to redact confidential information.
I know
we're not going beyond that.
That's the issue in the case.
Correct.
But your argument goes much further than that.
And the
your argument says, look at A, C, and you should really look at the whole statute. and you read it to say the goal is an open records, open government. That's the policy. But also in the statute is the policy of passing on the costs. Now, this one is redaction. What are the costs?
In the city, we've seen an authority respond by charging the cost for the attorney to review the request and advise on what can be disclosed.
That's what I'm talking about.
We're
exactly.
not advocating that those costs can be passed to the requester. We're not advocating.
How does that differ from redaction?
Redaction is encompassed within with producing the responsive record in a format that's disclosable. I think it's separate from legal advice. It's separate from conducting the balancing test. It's the actual nuts and bolts process of locating disclosable portions, assembling the disclosable portions, and reproducing. So I think it's in this.
Well, sometimes the lawyer says, I think that this is the way it has to be done. This should be redacted. This shouldn't be redacted. This should be the format. This shouldn't be the format. How does that differ from actually doing it? It may take more time to decide whether to do it than to actually redact, right?
That's true.
Yeah. So why is the lawyer any different than the employee who does the redacting or makes the decision? If the employee makes the decision, it's charged. If the attorney makes the decision, it's not charged.
The attorney is not the authority. The authority is the one who has to make the disclosure decision. And while they may require legal advice and frequently do, that part of the process is not contemplated. In this case, there were also extensive meetings within the police department and with the reporters. Mm-hmm. Those fees were not charged. That was just trying to sift down and understand what was being requested. There were attempts to try to narrow the request. The department offered to provide a random 10% of the records to reduce the costs.
I have another question. And one technique the court uses when it does statutory interpretation, it says, well, if the legislature wanted to charge all costs, then the legislature would have said so. But it knows how to say that. All direct, actual, et cetera, costs are to be charged. Then we'd fight about whether the attorney is direct or not, right?
Correct.
The legislature didn't say that. The legislature explicitly set forth several statutory provisions isolating what costs it was going to allow. How do you get around that?
I think the way I get around it is that the court is given the responsibility to interpret the statute. This court has frequently interpreted the public records law. And was Nikki V. Erickson, the court, looking at other statutes, applying public policy reasons and other court decisions, determined that implicit in the law was a right for a record subject to receive notice and an opportunity to object to an authority's disclosure decision. In MTEA v. MBSD, that right of notice to a record subject was expanded. The court in MTEA found it significant that the legislature at the time MTEA was decided had not responded to the court's decision in Wisnicki. So the court is free. There's nothing that stops the court from interpreting the public records law and finding implicit within the law what is maybe not specifically in the language of the law. Mm-hmm. If you look at other states' interpretation of their public records law, as the court did in Schill, two cases that I noticed, one is the Kansas Supreme Court in 2005, has a similar, though not identical, public records statute. In that case, the court noted, as a case of first impression, the issue came up on who pays the costs for redacting confidential information from a record prior to disclosure. The court noted that its law includes a policy of openness. Its law mandates redaction of confidential information. Its law is silent on the issue of who pays those costs. The statutory language is not identical, but the court in Kansas found that its law does not contemplate the authority paying the cost of complying with a public records request and found that the requester must pay the cost for redacting confidential information contained in a responsive record.
Counsel, explain a little problem for me. Give me the answer, if you would. When the chief was asking you about attorney's costs, and you said, oh, no, we wouldn't pass on or think appropriate to pass on attorney's costs that were as a result of reviewing whether or not something is disclosable and should be redacted. Yet earlier in your argument, when you were saying redaction is part of location, you analogized it to the Attorney General opinion, and you said the Attorney General opinion talked about it was not readily comprehensible form, and you said all we have here is something that is not in a readily disclosable form, and we have to locate and determine what portion of those records are actually public records. It seems to me that's exactly what an attorney's advice may very well cover. So why would an attorney's advice be able to be charged? Because it is to help determine what portion of the records are actually public records. So help me with that. It seems like your response is a little bit in tension.
The attorney typically advises on prohibited disclosure. On conducting the balancing test, I interpret the case law that the authority must conduct that balancing test. Then the attorney may advise as to whether that's defensible or not, but the authority is given the primary responsibility of that process.
Responsibility, but don't you think the authority oftentimes will contact an attorney and say, what's your advice on this?
And the attorney would respond that you must conduct, the authority must conduct the balancing test, mm-hmm. and give prior cases in which the courts ruled on an authority's conducting of the balancing test in under various factual scenarios. I think facts are very, very important in conducting that balancing test. They have to be done on a case-by-case basis, but I believe it's the authority's responsibility to do that process. It's the attorney's responsibility to point out those types of portions of records that, by law, an authority is prohibited from disclosing. In the data tree case from Kansas, that case, oh, I see my time is up. Can I?
May continue. Just
in the data tree.
Complete your thought, please.
In the data tree case, that involved non-disclosure decisions based upon statutory exceptions and balancing test decisions, and the court ruled that those types of redaction costs are to be paid by the requester. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Drebs.
The issue is the law of other states. Counsel pointed out that Kansas Supreme Court reached a different conclusion than we're urging on this court, but it did so on a very different statute. The statute in Kansas allows each public agency to prescribe reasonable fees for providing access to or furnishing copies of records, and goes on to provide that the fee shall not exceed the actual cost of furnishing copies, including the cost of staff time required to make the information available. That is a much broader fee provision than our legislature has chosen for Wisconsin. Our legislature specifies four tasks for which authorities may charge requesters. We contend they may charge for no other work that they do to comply with the records law. Kansas. including the cost of staff time required to make the information available.
Justice Prosser has
a
question.
Could I ask, in 1935 sub 3, there are at least two references to except as otherwise provided by law. What does that mean?
Well, the Attorney General addressed that in the first year after the statute was passed, and the Attorney General, I think, correctly concluded except as otherwise provided by law means by statute. And that is a consistent application if it's viewed in the other sections where that phrase is used, and I think it's appropriate to defer to the legislature on this issue. The legislature has preserved this court's role in developing the common law on access to records, the substantive common law on which records shall be made public. But the procedures are specified in the statute. The legislature did not invite this court to supplement, much less to supersede the statutory provisions.
Suppose redaction is embodied in some statute.
If the statute authorized charging for separating information or redaction, we wouldn't be here.
I'm talking about the duty of redaction.
The duty is imposed in Section 19.36 sub 6. The duty to provide records, to provide copies of records, is also specified in Section 19.35 sub 1. And there is a specific corresponding provision that allows charging for providing copies. In another section, they impose a different duty, but there is no provision authorizing charging for that. Therefore, consistent with the rules of statutory interpretation, no charge is allowed. Legislative silence is not an invitation for court intervention. It's that simple. We hear subtle changes in the city's position here. They argued below that this court changed the law in Osborne and Wire Data. I didn't hear that from the city this morning. Now I hear they're relying on an earlier Attorney General opinion that talked about charging for a computer run in 1983 in order to take information from the computer where it is not
comprehensive. Would you agree that in Osborne we decided that redaction had to occur? So you had to locate what part of a public record was providable, and the authority had the obligation then to redact that part that was not to be provided.
The court imposed and enforced the statutory duty to redact records.
All right.
I do
and
not
didn't
agree.
We say in Osborne also that we are going to, this is going to cost the requester? We didn't address what the fee would be, but didn't we say in Osborne that this was going to cost the requester?
Yes, you did. You
okay.
said very specifically.
So we must have had some idea that it would fit someplace in the statutes, wouldn't you think?
Well, the court did not say it could charge for redacting.
No,
the court said very specifically that it could charge for reproduction, location, and photographic processing. Mm-hmm. That's perfectly consistent with the statute. The issue, the elephant in the room, was redaction. The university was complaining that there were 450,000 records, not records, files, that it would have to review in order to comply with the request. That was certainly a burden. But this court said the statute does not let you shirk that responsibility simply because it is large.
Counsel.
I understand that, but we did caution the requester that they were going to have to pay to gather what was needed to provide the records, correct?
Well, that is partly why we're here. The court used varying language. In the specific discussion of charges to the requester, it said the custodian does not by itself have to bear the burden of compliance. It can charge reproduction, location, and photographic processing. Again, perfectly consistent with the statute. It was when the court summarized its ruling at the beginning and end of the decision that the ambiguity that brings us here this morning came in. There the court said, can charge the actual cost of compliance. That standard is completely contrary to the legislative direction of specified and narrow fees and constitutes a wholesale revision.
Counsel, it does seem to me that the city is arguing as well that this case requires an interpretation of the phrases location and reproduction. I think you were going to address that. I know your red light is on. If you could do it in a sentence or two, or minimally, I would appreciate that.
Mr. Rips, very much. You may continue.
Thank you. I did point out that that is not the argument the city made below.
Right.
However, I think plain English says this is not location.
So you're relying that it's not, that it's not ambiguous would be your response to the city's argument.
It is not ambiguous. The appendix to the city's brief includes examples of the police records. Sergeant Michael Jones' affidavit, paragraph 15, describes the process. They're printed out from the computer. They've already been located. We paid $100 to locate them. They print them out, and they use a black pen on paper to redact confidential information. The words that are blacked out are undoubtedly comprehensible. That is not incomprehensible information once it's been removed from the computer and printed out on paper. And we're talking about the same process of careful review and redaction in 2013 or 12 that we were applying in 1983 when the statute passed. Yes, record keeping has changed, but the process of redaction has not.
Scripts. I thought I was waiting for a First Amendment argument. Because if the city allows no cost or doesn't charge a cost, if one person comes in and asks for a few records, and I'm going to go in and I'm going to ask records that relate to me or family, but the newspaper wants... It may want a record on a particular person who's newsworthy, but the media views itself as the watchdog of the government and how the government operates, and therefore it might be interested in the arrest record of Mr. A, B, or C, but it may also be interested in arrest records, and I just picked that. That may be a bad example, but generally to see how government operates, right? Which I will not do, or an usual citizen does not do. So if they don't charge me, and they don't charge, say, each of the seven of us and everybody else, whatever the cost is, $30, you multiply that out when you view all the subscribers to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that you represent. My point is that it just seems that It's discriminatory to the media. It's going to ask for these large amounts.
Well, I think you're exactly correct to point out that relying, if the court says we meant to say in Osborne that you can charge all of the actual costs of compliance and forget about the statutes and will rely on authorities like the city of Milwaukee did in this case to waive what it considers a proper charge, city was very explicit about how many times it didn't charge everything its position would allow it to charge in this circumstance. But every authority is not going to be as fair as the city of Milwaukee believes itself to be in this case, and we will find a situation where there is discriminatory waiver of fees based perhaps on the identity of the requester, their presumed purpose, or the fact that they've written critically about the authority in the past. It is a very slippery slope to allow a broad fee when it goes without saying that the higher the fee, the less accountability there is going to be.
Well, because Counselor, it's provided in statute.
Just as
a waiver of fees is provided in statute. It's not something that the city made up.
No, indeed, it is provided in the statute, but it is not a proper substitute for the narrow and limited fees the legislature specified to say, let's rely on authorities to forgive the fee whenever it's appropriate.
Well, it says public interest or words to that effect.
And that's a debatable issue.
Any further questions?
Good case.
Thank you, Mr. Drebs, for your argument, and thank you, Ms. Benedon, and Ms. Swant for your arguments today in yet another open records case and an interpretation of this statute. That concludes our hearing in 2011 AP 1112, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel versus the City of Milwaukee. The court will take a brief recess so these students may leave if they wish and additional students may enter the courtroom. Court's in recess.